Good evening and welcome to the Beyond the Beltway Radio Network. Thanks for joining us this evening. We'll be doing our hard breaks at 15, 30, and 45 of both hours. If you have any technical difficulties you'd like to call us about, please try us at area code 630-278-8603. This is Beyond the Beltway. Stand by. We'll be coming up on the air 6 minutes after. Just 3 minutes until we begin Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont. 3 minutes, six after the hour, we'll be on the air. Welcome to all our network affiliates. This is Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont. Stand by, we're just under 2 minutes till air at 6 minutes after. We're just 1 minute away now from Beyond the Beltway with Bruce Dumont. Stand by. When you hear the music end, you'll have just under 30 seconds to air. Stand by for Beyond the Beltway.
Live from Chicago, this is Bruce Dumont with our Beyond the Beltway analysis of national politics, featuring occasional injections of rumor and innuendo, all offered up by our panel of political insiders, pundits, power brokers, public servants, professors, and most importantly, plain-speaking Americans from coast to coast. Tonight, featuring commentary by Nick Kacharubas of DePaul University, Dan Johnson, Republican Chris Roebling and Craig Sauter of DePaul University. Our program tonight coming to you from the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Nice to have you with us, where our phone lines are open at 1-800-723-8289. That's 1-800-723-8289. If you'd like to email me a comment, it's Bruce Dumont at museum.tv. If you want to tweet me a comment, it's at Dumo, at D-U-M-O. And, of course, you can watch and listen to the entire broadcast on our website, beyondthebeltway.com. There are 43 days to go before the Iowa caucus, 323 days to go before Election Day, and we begin tonight by focusing on what's happening in the Democratic Party, because last night they had a big debate and a very contentious debate in the state of New Hampshire, and we'll get a live report from the Granite State a little bit later on in the broadcast. But I want to talk a little bit about what everybody accomplished last night, and I think one of the discussions after the program was that everybody probably had their best debate of the night. But my question to you, and we should mention, we're going to start with one of our Democrats, who's Dan Johnson with us this evening. Dan, we should mention at the beginning of the program, you are a delegate for Bernie Sanders. So you're a supporter of Bernie Sanders. But as you look and heard him talk last night, what was the biggest mistake that you think that Hillary Clinton made that may keep her from getting the nomination?
Probably this is too wonky, and it probably won't stop her from getting the nomination.
Democrats love wonky stuff.
Well, then let's get wonky. When she sort of reaffirmed I think when she solidified her pledge, I will not raise any taxes on anyone making less than $250,000. And Bernie said, well, look, you're not going to be able to do paid family leave. You're now not going to be able to raise the cap on Social Security above $110,000, which is where people stop paying Social Security.
It's getting wonky.
Yeah. I think that was the moment when those of us that believe we need more equality in our economy said we've got an issue.
Chris Roebling is a Republican. He's also a political analyst for WGN. What was the high point and low point for Hillary Clinton last night in your view?
Well, I suppose in some sense the high point was her answer to the apology of Bernie Sanders for his this data breach, which is very wonky, and we don't have to get into it. I think the low point, frankly, well, any time they talk about foreign affairs is a low point for Hillary Clinton because there's a record of unmitigated failure on foreign affairs. But, you know, this whole conversation, for instance, about college, and we got two college professors here, there's just this profound unreality to the conversation that the Democrats are having about paying for this and making this free.
But wait a minute. What about her, though? Because they all agree with that, which as a party may be a problem. But what about her last night? What was her high point and low point?
I think her low point was failing to answer the question that was put to the three by that non-ABC journalist, whoever that guy was. I think he was a professor from St. Anselm's College.
Right.
And he said, how do you actually make college less expensive? And not one of them had an answer. What all of them said was, we're just going to throw more taxpayer dollars at college. Not one of them, including Hillary.
Craig Sauter joins us, also a Democrat. Your take on Hillary's high point and low point last night.
Her low point was probably her defense of her actions in Libya. Her high point was,
we are where we want to be against ISIS.
Yeah, that was another low point. But I think she was referring to the agreement that just occurred at the United Nations in terms of bringing so many forces together, including the Chinese. The high point was, may the force be with you.
Nick Ketcherubas from DePaul University, the high point and the low point for Hillary last night in your view?
In my view, I think the high point was the way she handled the question, separating gun control from the terrorism issue. I thought she did a very nice job of laying that out and saying, hey, these are really two separate issues that we do need to look at. And I think that separated her. Low point, I would say, is her reference to Trump and the videos. I think that's going to come back to bite her.
Does everybody agree with that? Making the comment that Donald Trump videos are being played by ISIS as recruitment?
You know, I think in fact there aren't any videos, but, you know, that could be an issue. But
they are stored in the same vault as the cheering Muslims in New Jersey. They're in a vault somewhere in the world.
But the big picture point is, like, exceptionally valid, that it is incredibly damaging to our national security to have the leading Republican presidential candidate, according to the polls, be such an idiot about isolating Muslims from the fight against the biggest terrorist threat in the world.
Did insofar as the general election is concerned, is Hillary so far ahead at the moment, Craig, that she can come across like a hawk in a Democratic primary? She certainly was the hawk on that stage last night, even though she has some cleaning up to do and cleaning up her own mess in Libya. She certainly is. She didn't back away from being
a hawk.
It's
not going to hurt her this time like it hurt her last time because, Bernie's a legitimate threat to her, but she just has such a big lead here. I don't think it's going to hurt her.
Chris Roebling?
Can I make one other point? That when Hillary gets elected, if she gets elected, that her inner Alinsky is going to come out. I mean, I think that she's been painted as a right-wing Democrat, but I think she's pretty much, when given free rein, is going to...
Well, that's certainly going to make you. That's going to.
I don't know. Yeah, really.
We should be so lucky.
Yeah. Well, I think that she was not. She certainly has been doing her best to obscure that, and I think that gets to her biggest weakness, which is the majority of American people do not trust her with a font of reasons therefore. And so, I think that if it is the case that she is suppressing her inner Alinsky now,
yeah.
Although I didn't hear that when she was sort of attacking single payer,
right?
Okay, from the good senator, she's
or attacking free college,
or attacking free college,
right. Attacking.
She is not she to a Republican. She's pretty far left, but I think to the left, she remains a little bit in the middle or on the right.
Yeah.
Wasn't Bernie one of the things about Bernie Sanders that kind of struck me last night? Insofar as clarity, it seems to me he was more clear in defining ISIS
yes.
as absolutely, positively the problem that we have to deal with, which, by the way, is very similar to the position that Donald Trump has.
I thought it was clear. I thought the debate was really excellent in sort of...
It was a lot of fun.
It was
not boring in any way.
And it was insightful, right? There really is a distinction whether regime change with...
Enlightening.
Nobody watched it because the Democrats are afraid of people seeing Hillary, and they're afraid of people beginning to get an idea of how many of these big ideas come back in tax raises for the middle class. The Democrats say they're for the middle class, but I know that Debbie Wasserman Schultz, when she's not mismanaging the Democratic National Committee data vendors, okay, is trying to hide Hillary from the American public. And that's the only explanation for doing this on a Saturday night
in really,
December.
Yeah, and that's too bad for Hillary last night because she looked very good. She looked
great.
I thought one of her high points, obviously, may the force be with you, was a good way to end it. But also when she looked and she said, everybody should like me. And she had a big smile.
That was a very positive response.
And also it seemed to me that I don't think that necessarily was scripted. I think that was an ad-lib response. 1-800-723-8029. We're talking about Democrats in the first segment, but we're going to talk about the Republicans as well. 1-800-723-8029. Wherever you're listening from coast to coast, how do you feel the Democratic debate went last night? If you watched it, back shortly.
Excuse me, Chad. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. I want to just talk a little bit about Hillary's comment about the Trump videos. I alluded to the fact of the missing videos that Donald Trump has alluded that he saw. Does this become a big credibility issue for her? Or because it's dealing with Donald Trump, isn't anybody going to care, Chris?
If a person is under investigation by the FBI for violating the Espionage Act while she is running for president of the United States. There is nothing she can say. There is no utterance that she can produce that is going to impair her credibility more than that. And we have seen the media, I think, totally obscure what's going on with those emails because they're in the tank for Hillary Clinton. So I don't think this is a big deal. And I do want to say I disagree with my friend Dan. I don't think this is any kind of recruitment tactic or element for ISIS. If you read the history of Islam in the 7th century, the rejectionists, this is 40 years after the death of the prophet, may peace be upon him. 40 years after, they had the rejectionists and they were going out and doing exactly what ISIS is doing today. This is rooted in a strain of Islam that comes almost from the beginning. This is not all of Islam, nor is it something that can be promoted by a Donald Trump video.
I want to come back to, Nick, something that you said earlier. You talked about the gun battle, no pun intended. Mm-hmm. It was a discussion. The most heated part of the debate last night was when all three got in on the gun issue, and Sanders took exception to some things that Martin O'Malley had to say, who was really very, very hot last night. My question to you is, as I was listening to that debate, with everyone really wrapping themselves into going after the NRA and increasing gun registration and legislation in the United States, bordering on confiscation, Hillary probably the most bordering on that, all I was thinking about, well, there goes Pennsylvania. We're going to have the same problem that Al Gore had. I'm wondering if this issue, since the fact that more and more people are going out and buying guns in the wake of San Bernardino and Paris, I'm wondering whether the Democrats, who are in this small circle who only talk to themselves, I wonder politically whether they are digging a deep hole, Craig, that they're not going to be able to walk back and have a moderate position on gun control.
Well, you have two forces going here. If her figure is about 33,000 people a year dying from gun violence, I mean, people are aware of that. So you have a lot of people who want some kind of gun control, and you have large numbers of people who obviously don't. So I'm not sure how it balances out nationally. But I've been involved in congressional races where Democrats who are sitting Democrats lost because of the gun issue.
Are you worried about it?
I think it's shifting. I think, children getting murdered often from gun violence has shifted in the last decade or so.
Forget the last decade. What about the last month? The number of people that have gone out and bought a gun.
How many of those? So here, this is my point. My gut is that those are Republican voters by and large. I don't think many swing voters are going to be driven by a gun issue to go with an R. I think the particularly emotionally affecting carnage of children getting killed is shifting people to think one of the things we need to do to protect our national security is not allow such ridiculously easy access to guns.
What I think she did was a good job of actually disbanding the two, the terrorism and the gun control issue, which the president kind of had lumped together. Now,
mistakenly.
Exactly.
Because he doesn't watch cable news.
So the fact that she separated those two, I think, gives her an opportunity to make a case for the gun control issue separate from national security. Now, obviously the Republicans, being any good Republican, is going to try to say, well, wait a second, you can't unbound those two. So it can come back to hurt her, but I thought she handled it very well.
We're going to go to a call. Kyle, listening to us on WMND. In South Bend, Indiana. Go ahead, Kyle.
Hey, guys. First of all, I wanted to let you know I love the dialogue. That's why I love this show, because we actually get to the issues. We get to talk about it. It's not name-calling. It's talking and dialogue. So I love that.
Thank you. But we're going to save the name-calling until later. Go ahead.
There you go. Yeah, yeah. Well, the thing, my question's posed towards the Democrats on the panel. I'm a 25-year-old white male. I got a job at a retailer when I turned 18. I worked a couple of jobs before I turned then. Well, now I'm a manager at a Fortune 100 company, and this year I'm going to clear $80,000. I'm excited. I'm doing well. My question is that when I watched the debate last night, and when I watched the debate, for the other one before that, I hear about, Black Lives Matter. I hear about abortion rights for women. I hear about women's rights. I hear about the rights of the Syrian refugees and all these other kind of things. But as a 25-year-old white male, you know, that makes $80,000 a year because I worked really hard, you know, I just wanted to know, like, what's in store for me? Why should I vote for a Democrat? Because I don't all feel right. like anything that they're talking about is going to help me at all.
Let's let Dan respond.
Kyle, appreciate the question. First off, your retailer employer is going to have a lot more customers because when we raise the minimum wage to something that people can live on, you're going to have a lot more people able to buy stuff at your stores, and so you're going to be able to keep your job and maybe get a raise. Second is eventually when you meet a woman or a man, whatever, fall in love and have kids, we're going to make your college free if my guy wins, or at least debt-free if Hillary wins. And that's an incredibly huge expense. If you have any college debt, sounds like maybe you don't, good for you, we're going to refinance that. And the other guys, they're happy to let the banks make as much money as they can off of you. And finally, most importantly, we're not going to stick you with the very expensive bill of another ridiculous war in the Middle East that doesn't accomplish anything for national security interests.
Yeah, and all those wonderful programs will be paid for through the taxpayers.
Yeah,
but I want to follow up on one thing. You say we're not going to have another war in the Middle East to waste money, but Bernie Sanders said over and over again, our top target is ISIS.
Yes,
he said that most of the fighters have got to be Muslim countries, but he didn't say there wasn't going to be any American boots on the ground. Did he? I didn't hear him say that.
So the $4 trillion Republican expense of the ridiculously stupid Iraq war.
For which Hillary voted.
Yeah, well, which is why she didn't win the nomination in 2008.
For which Donald Trump opposed. Go ahead.
And you know what? Good for him. It was a point of reason from Donald Trump that there was $4 trillion that should have been spent on American soil. And
on infrastructure, he went through
absolutely.
The whole
thing. He was absolutely right about that.
And Kyle, you have $170,000 more to make before they are going to tax you. They set the limit at $250,000.
And if you believe probably.
Go ahead, Kyle.
Well, the thing I was going to say is kind of what you said. I'm a manager of a retailer, and I'm going to tell you what right now. You raise minimum wage, I'm going to fire a lot of people. I'm not going to be able to afford it. Like, yep. I already am at the point where I'm cutting labor, and I have to send people home, and I can't hire people because my labor is being cut already. I already know that my cost is going to go up. My labor is going to go down. I'm going to have to get rid of people. And my other thing I wanted to say was that when the last time I got a bonus check because I worked really hard and I hit my budgets and I did a good job, the federal government took $1,000 out of my check alone, just the federal government. It took $1,000 from me, and that I'm telling you what right now. When you gross almost $2,600 and you come home with $1,500, it doesn't really want me to work that hard to get to the next step or take that next step in my career because it doesn't seem like you're giving me any kind of reward for working hard.
Kyle, let me ask you this question. Kyle, let me ask you this: who is your favorite for the Republican nomination?
Honestly, I'm a big Rand Paul fan. I love Rand Paul because I'm a center-right Republican because basically when it comes to social issues, what you do in your own home is what you do in your own home. I don't force it on me.
Kyle, let me ask you this. Kyle, let me ask. If you've watched the show regularly, you knew for the last year and a half, I also am a big Rand Paul fan. We also have to look each other. I'm going to look you in the camera. And you're going to look into the radio, and we're going to say eye to eye, he's not going to be president of the United States. He's going nowhere. So now let me ask you, as a backup choice, if you have to hold your nose and vote for someone, you don't look like you're going to or sound like someone that's going to vote for a Democrat, who is the person that is most likely to get your vote? By the way, I will also say, if you want to vote for Rand Paul, go ahead and do it. I firmly believe that people should vote for who they want.
But is there
a backup position for you?
Well, I'll be honest with you. I like Kasich, but the only thing that worries me about Kasich is that he's going to be another Boehner. He's going to be another McConnell. I want somebody that's going to get in there and fight for what's right. So I do like because Kasich has the background. He did balance the budget.
Okay.
He's got the background. So I do like him. And then if I absolutely had to hold my nose, I would hold my nose at Cruz and Trump because I can't stand a Hillary or a Bernie president.
Okay, but listen,
let me ask you. Kyle, let me ask you. Did you pay attention to Martin O'Malley at all? Because he made a big deal about balancing the budget as governor of Maryland.
I definitely have been paying attention a little bit to O'Malley. The only problem with him is his gun stance. I just can't believe that we would ever get rid of the Second Amendment. My thing is that any of the enforce the laws that we have. You know, that's the biggest thing. And his gun rights, that worries me.
But Martin, who is he in the camp?
No. Martin O'Malley, yeah, he was there the other night. He wasn't mentioned in the analysis, but he was there. Listen, thank you very much, Kyle. We do appreciate it. By the way, we should mention that just briefly to bring you up to date on the latest, this is the latest Fox poll for the Republican nomination. They came out with their latest poll today. Donald Trump now soaring to 39%.
Wow.
Ted Cruz in second place at 18%, Marco Rubio 11%, Ben Carson slipping way down to 9%, a huge fall for him, and the rest are basically a whistling Dixie. My question to you, yes. Chris Roebling.
Yes. I got the answer.
All right.
Cruz will win in Iowa. Cruz is going to win in Iowa because he is so well organized. He has got the folks. I think that Trump is Trump's a little light on actual organization in Iowa, and that's where you need it because you got to have people come out on a cold January night
for
3 hours.
That has never been a natural state for his constituency. I don't know why he continues to raise the expectation. That is not a normal that's why he said that basically they were stupid.
Trump is hoping to get to New Hampshire and maybe with a little bit of Yahoo support in South Carolina.
Okay, 1-800-723-8289. 1-800-723-8289. When we come back, we're going to talk about Jeb Bush. Is there a pulse?
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight, we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Last week at the Republican debate, the animosity between Donald Trump and Jeb Bush was very apparent. Yesterday, in a appearance in New Hampshire, Jeb Bush referred to Donald Trump as a jerk. Today, when Donald Trump was on basically one of the shows, he was all over the news today, as he generally is on a Sunday. He said that Jeb is an embarrassment to the Bush family, and continued to say that if he keeps talking this way, he's going to be out of the race. He's pathetic.
Yeah, it's pretty
Is what Donald Trump said true?
I don't think that Jeb Bush is an embarrassment to the Bush family, but Jeb Bush is not happening this presidential year. And I suppose there's sort of a last gasp in there, and he has so much support, and he's got so much bank account, and he's got the super PAC. I mean, there's all this kind of stuff behind him. So I think they're going to take another look. I know that the fundraisers are working very hard. I think there's sort of a write-off of Iowa, which is ironic, if you recall his father in 1988 and how important, you know, Mary Louise Smith and all those people were to his father's development as a presidential candidate in his own right after Reagan. But they're going for New Hampshire. They're going to try and get something done in New Hampshire. And I think South Carolina is more receptive to Bush being a southern state and him being a southern governor. So
how can, I want to ask you because you hang around with a lot of Republicans and donors, how can the Republican donor base continue to be so dead wrong in trying to save a candidate that is absolutely, this candidate and this candidacy has been dead in the water for about 5 months, and by doing what they're doing, it seems to me that they're just extending this pain. Long ago, they should have moved to either a Kasich or a Rubio, and they've got a lot more going because had they done that, Bush would have totally been gone, and one of those candidates, I think, would be significantly higher in the polls, most notably Rubio, but Kasich as well, or even Christie. But they're blowing it by having their heads up their butts.
Well, I think you answered the question. With the exception of my dear college friend who just emailed me yesterday asking me for $1,000 for the New Hampshire campaign, I'm going to say this. The answer to your question is two words: genetic inferiority. Okay? Republicans at that level, Beltway Republicans, I believe, are truly inferior genetically to the rest of the gene pool. I mean, they are so out of touch. They are the people applauding Paul Ryan now for this trillion-dollar debacle of a vote.
But it
was taken to avoid any kind of confrontation with the president of the United States, and they think that's okay. And they've never understood independent, conservative, reform, republicanism, and they're very afraid of it.
Let me ask more, because it's got to be more than just D.C. money that's backing Jeb. There's so
a hell of a lot.
There's just so much of it, and so I want to. And I don't understand. Well, so I want to understand what's
Texas money,
little Texas, little right? Wall Street.
And but I also think that there is some family ties to both former President Bush that people feel a loyalty to support him at least monetarily.
Remember what happened to McCain.
It seems to me that here's where the legacy of where I think Jeb Bush might be is the fact that he is coming out and attacking Trump. I don't think he's going to get the nomination, but if somehow Trump get cleared from the field, he's got the other candidates may owe him a little bit.
He's not going to get cleared from the field.
These
people are I mean, it seems to me that they are doing more. I'm talking about the establishment right now.
Right.
By not realizing that the world has changed. The demographics of the country have changed. Politics has changed.
I don't disagree. It's anti-establishment.
Behind the curve, if the party goes down, they are as much to blame for the party going down as Donald Trump.
This is not the first time it's true. A lot of people said this was true at the time of Mitt Romney. A lot of people have said this was true, really, at the time, the way the party dealt with Barry Goldwater. I mean, the party has this conservative wing, and it's got this establishment wing, and the establishment wing is really a small, slightly smaller government Democrat kind of orientation. That big government is okay, big regulation is okay, big banks are okay.
If it's for the military.
And right, it's okay for people to deal with the government at that big level.
Your thought on this?
What was my thought? My thought was that they probably look at McCain as an example. McCain was nowhere at this point in, 2008? 2008, and then all of a sudden he got the nomination. So they're hoping for miracles. But there's no sense in vacating the stage before you've at least run one or two.
But this anti-establishment.
What about the issue of embarrassment? I mean, I said 6 months ago on this program, Jeb Bush is the John Connolly of this campaign.
Right.
Well, he's trying to redeem himself.
He's got
to
be gone by Florida. Maybe Rubio may be gone by Florida. They can't be embarrassed. And Donald Trump's got a big lead in that state.
Yeah.
So what we have in the Republican side, if I may quickly say,
surely,
you've got this sort of outsider primary that is going on, and you've got an insider primary. And Bush is losing the insider primary to Marco Rubio. Kasich is losing it to Marco Rubio. The outsider primary is being led by Donald Trump. But what you have with Cruz is he happens to be a senator, but he's an outsider. And Cruz is positioning himself to be there if Trump slips on a banana peel.
Is the mistake, though, back to what I just said, is the mistake those that have been propping up Bush, Kasich, and Christie, should they have not all coalesced behind Rubio earlier on? Because Rubio, as good as he always is in a debate, he doesn't seem to really soar after the debate.
No, he doesn't make any progress. And I thought he got hurt last night this week in that debate. He looked stunned by some of the criticism that Cruz was giving, and he sort of became vulnerable to
people who didn't know what he was doing.
Well, they both got
talking
hurt.
To my two Republican friends, I've got a couple. In Florida, there's a congressman, and he's worked with both Rubio and Bush, but he chooses to support Bush because, again, of that idea that their belief system is Bush would be able to handle the executive responsibility that he believes then better than Rubio. I'm not saying that's going to hold water because these poll numbers don't show it. But I think there's that tie there that people are not willing to yet let go.
Well, let's not. I mean, Bush was a tremendous governor, and he did a lot of good down in the state of Florida. And that doesn't mean that he's a good presidential candidate. He's obviously not a good presidential candidate. But he was a great governor, and I don't think there's anything wrong. And no flies on
his
government.
He even stumbled over those attack lines when he was calling Trump the candidate of chaos.
One thing that's interesting is, a year ago, everyone was kind of saying, like, oh, my God, we have to do another Bush-Clinton election.
Right.
What a downer. And somehow the Republicans are like, no, we're not doing another Bush. But
right.
Democrats are like, hey, it's Hillary, right? It's
right.
Breaking the glass ceiling. And somehow that sort of Clinton fatigue or 90s fatigue, it just hasn't taken in
the Democratic
primary.
Well, but there's an anti-establishment going on here,
too, as well.
But that's
different, right? I think there's something about
this. Have a lot of similarities. They've got a lot of similarities, not on the position, but I'm talking about
the energy.
The energy is
true.
Just incredible.
Well, even on the position today on Meet the Press, Trump said that, if Bernie said that about separating the two issues in Syria, then we're together.
Donald Trump is praised by Putin. Was that a good idea or a bad idea?
Well, you didn't have control.
You don't have any control over Putin.
Well, I know. You don't have any control over Trump
what
either.
Trump has – wait.
That's for sure.
Trump has control over Trump, or maybe he doesn't, and that's an untold story.
I think we know he doesn't.
I think we know that he doesn't, and you talk about filters that are down, and this guy is very dangerous. And I think that Trump actually – I probably sound like an establishmentarian, which I am not, but I will tell you, Trump's gaffes and Trump's very serious policy mistakes, especially about Russia and what he was saying today about the United States and Russia, I believe are accumulating so that Cruz will look prescient in his refusal to attack Trump personally.
Specific, what was it that Trump
said? He
said,
quote, we don't need disagreement with Russia. And let's not forget Russia, Russian-American diplomatic history. Russia was always on our side early on, Catherine the Great, et cetera, et cetera. So there was a closeness with Russia until the communists. But since then, we have been adversaries and two continental nations, et cetera, et cetera. And his sort of flippant refusal to acknowledge the existence of very serious human rights, rule of law, international order, and international behavior issues between Russia and the United States, I think disqualifies him from serving as president.
But when he says, it's a good – Trump's saying, it's a good idea if the United States get along better. Does the average voter – agree or disagree with that?
Well, they know that the Russians still have tens of thousands, thousands of nuclear warheads aimed at us. It doesn't hurt for us to have.
How does an independent and how does a liberal Democrat feel about that?
Do you
agree with that position?
Look, I think that there's an anti-war streak about Donald Trump that the Paul family used to own in primaries,
right.
And Trump's taken it. And I think the establishment is a military, big government for military. Absolutely. Pile on the pork for the weapons contractor.
Well,
he says that about Russia, I think that's tapping into this, why are we always spending more money to always attack more countries? And I think that's an appeal to a lot of the outsider Republicans.
He's not easy. He's such a popular – he's not easy to pin down.
That's right.
100% of the time, even a couple of weeks ago when he criticized Anton Scalia's remarks about affirmative action.
Yeah.
I mean he's all over the map.
Well, he's no consistent conservative, that's for sure.
No.
And I just wanted to say that, he's it's interesting because he wants to go in and bomb, ISIS and all these things. But here in Russia, I don't want to use that word. But here he's showing an interest in diplomatic ability. So it's like, that statement that you mentioned really appeals to his base. But it also appeals to some folks who may be independent thinking, saying, but there's a lot of other things that
he's doing very well with independent. In the national polls. I'm Bruce Dumont, 1-800-723-8029. Back shortly.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Let's go to calls. Let's go to Mike listening to us in Spokane on KXLY. Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you, Bruce, and Merry Christmas to you and your guests as well.
Thank you.
You know, I didn't see the debate. I was at Mass and the Knights of Columbus Christmas party, but with Hillary Clinton, you know, she's currently under investigation concerning her possible breach of emails by the Justice Department. We don't know exactly how much she knew prior to Benghazi, whatever she says, and her approach on terrorism. She has no concrete solutions. We have to go after the terrorists on the ground and in the air.
Well, that's your opinion, but she basically says there should be a no-fly zone. Do you think that's a good idea to have a no-fly zone?
It's a start, sure, but the terrorists have to know that at some point we're going to come after them on the ground, commando or large commando forces.
Well, Mike, that's exactly what ISIS would like to have happen. They'd love to have American troops coming in to invade so it can be their end of days, exactly what they believe is the prophecy. So having American troops try to invade ISIS would be exactly what they're looking for.
Mike, listen, thanks very much. Thanks for your call. We're going to move on. Nick, your point.
Yeah, I was just going to make a point on that. Is I think she was strong in answering the concept of building a coalition. She said she's done it. She's been there. I mean, nobody can doubt those things. You may not believe in her email, but her ability to actually engage diplomatic affairs in this, that every candidate is saying we need to do that. Yeah, she was Secretary of State.
She was Secretary of State under when they quote convened a coalition for Libya, and they had no idea what they were doing, and the French led that, right? Well, they were leading from behind. They were not following from behind. They were quote leading from behind.
They agreed to get
The fact is, I mean, I wonder when accountability ever applies. Sorry, Dan. To the Democrats. Okay.
Well, Libya
is a disaster. Libya is a disaster. Benghazi is a disaster. Yemen is a disaster. She was there for the beginning of Yemen. She was there
but
for most
my
of
point
there
is
are...
what Republican candidate could create a coalition that has that experience. I don't see it in the field. At least she's got some experience with it. I'm not saying she's strong in it.
I don't want
but
that experience replicated, and nobody had seen George Herbert Walker Bush create a coalition before he did for the first Gulf War, which I think by any standard of diplomatic history is one of the most successful in history.
I want to go back to this other disaster that some people think is a disaster, and that's Donald Trump.
Trump, yes.
Now, you hang around with a lot of professional pals. A lot of the establishment folks, we said in the last segment, they don't seem to get it. I've said they've got their head up their butt. They don't seem to know what's going on out there. I mean, to me, they're believing that they're going to get together, they're going to get a lot of money, and they're going to take the majority position in the primary voters today. Trump plus Cruz, throw Carson in there with his 9.4%, whatever it is. I mean, it's almost 60% of the people. They want to change the will of 60% of the people, and they still think they're going to win an election. So that's stupid.
Yeah.
But what is Trump doing, and how is he reaching out to the professional people who, you know, the consultants that you can basically, you know, buy at an hourly rate?
Well, you can't. I mean, those folks have got to get at that level, they have to be successful. Once you're successful, you've got choices. When you've got choices, you can select yourself, work with Trump or no, I won't. You know, the Trump campaign and Fox News had a great segment on this. It's on the sixth floor of the Trump Tower in some raw space. Mm-hmm. And they've got something going on in social media. They've got a little bit of general media, very, very little. They've spent almost nothing on general media
because they
don't need to. They're constantly on TV. But they're trying to organize. They're trying to organize in New Hampshire, and they're trying to organize in South Carolina. I haven't heard the words written off Iowa, but I don't think they expect to do well in Iowa. And what they're hoping to do is follow up Iowa with a real showing in New Hampshire. So they're calling people. And a friend of mine was called. Actually, several friends of mine have been called. And the words that are coming out of these guys are, this is historic. You've never seen anything like it. We can do no wrong. People keep coming at us over the internet or whatever. They raised $4 million without asking for it. And I want to go back to another era, not to invoke the dark side of Watergate. But if you recall All the President's Men, there's this phenomenal scene where the secretary for the Committee for Reelection of the President says, we don't know how the money comes in so fast. We don't know what to do with it. Right. Okay. And that's exactly what's going on with the Trump campaign, in terms of support and in terms of money.
Isn't that extraordinary that by far the richest man to ever run for president of the United States hasn't spent his own money? Isn't that extraordinary? And that
may have spent $10-15 million, very little compared.
But, you know, Bruce Rauner like probably quadrupled in his race for governor here in Illinois.
Are you impressed by that?
It's a political accomplishment that you have to acknowledge.
It is amazing. And by the way, we should mention that Bernie Sanders, who's your candidate,
yeah,
he has surpassed Barack Obama. He has 2.2 million donors.
Yes. So not a super PAC. Running it all the cleanest campaign.
Donald Trump. I think one of the major appeals of Donald Trump is he said, you know what? I'm going to finance this myself. Mm-hmm. I'm not taking PAC money. I'm going to be beholden. The only people I'm going to be beholden to are the American people. I think that is one of the biggest appeals he has for independents, even for some blue-collar Democrats.
It's a similar thing to Bernie Sanders. People like Bernie and people that say it like Trump that say, I'm sick of the establishment. We're going to shake things up.
This is because on the Republican side, they have been so burned. What happened this week with the Paul Ryan budget is extremely important for understanding the alienation in the Republican base from all of these Washington guys. So a guy like Trump, who says, I'm doing it myself, people say he's not beholden to the K Street corridor of lobbyists and influence peddlers and seekers and all those people. They love them.
Sanders said today that Trump is a pathological liar. So we're getting name calling on the Democratic side as well.
That's probably not inaccurate. I mean, he's a great political campaign, but it's probably not inaccurate.
That'll make a good matchup if Hillary's running then, right?
The other point about, a quick thing about Russia, Trump, who obviously is vehemently opposed to the Iran deal, he says that the reason the Soviet or Russia was for it is because American tax dollars, which are going to go to Iran, are going to be turned around, given to Russia because Russia is selling arms to Iran.
Good morning. Absolutely. Obama is strengthening, you know, wherever he goes, he tries to strengthen the local dictator, whether it's Cuba or Iran. Obama viscerally says, how can we...
Yeah. An extraordinary run of diplomatic success. It's been an amazing run in diplomacy. Thank you, President Obama. The country thanks you.
1-800-723-8289. Give us a call. I'm Bruce Dumont.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton, Los Angeles, Universal City. At HiltonUniversal.com, they let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlinks Interior Landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown is a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be? Where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
Aren't we on too early? Yeah, bye. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago, and one of the things that the people were talking about a couple of weeks ago was the possibility of a brokered convention, a Republican convention in Cleveland. And Craig Sauter, you have written numerous books, including Inside the Wigwam, which is all about political campaigns and conventions, specifically conventions. You also wrote one specifically about Philadelphia. The Democrats are going to be meeting in Philadelphia next year. So as you look at this, what do you think is the likelihood of a brokered convention at this moment?
Well, I did a little calculation, and since the Democrats held their first convention in 1832 in a saloon in Baltimore and renominated Andrew Jackson as president and Martin Van Buren as vice president, created the Grand Coalition of the Democratic Party, there's been 46 presidential elections times two for the number of conventions. You get 92 total conventions that we've had up to this time. Mm-hmm. And 26 of those conventions have gone to more than one ballot. So that's approximately 28% of them. But that also includes up to 1936, there was a two-thirds rule with the Democratic Party, which meant that the candidates had to get two-thirds of the vote and not a majority to get the nomination. And since that rule – and that rule was written by the southern wing of the Democratic Party, so they'd always have a veto over the race issue. But since 1936, there have been, let's see, 19 presidential elections and 38 conventions, and only three of those have gone to more than one ballot. So that's 8%. The odds are very remote.
Nick, what do you think, the dynamics right now?
I think it's a possibility, but a low possibility. And I think it depends on how many of these candidates are – other than Trump, are able to get delegates at an early stage, and then whether they are able to stay in the race, because then they could possibly, you know, if they can keep Trump below the 50% threshold, there's a possibility.
Well, you need at least three people to get some kind of stalemate. The party regulars or the superdelegates are about 30% of them. I think that if Trump and Cruz went in as one and two, all they have to do is Trump say something like, hey, I don't want to run the government day to day. You take it over, Cruz, and I'm going to do the big issues, and they win.
I want to ask Chris Roebling, would you agree with something I said last week, is that the establishment may be more fearful of Ted Cruz than they are Donald Trump?
I think so, because Donald Trump has gotten along with the establishment in every city where he's developed anything. We're in Chicago. He has a $450 million tower about a block and a half away from where we're meeting, and he hired Ed Burke.
Right.
You know, he bought into the establishment as he's done wherever he goes.
Right.
Okay, so I think that Donald Trump does not have a day-in, day-out understanding of how these establishment forces control government outcomes. I he's sort of got this overall populist tinge.
No ideologue.
Whereas, not a consistent conservative. Ted Cruz is a guy who has studied this every night of his life since he was 11 years old. I mean, this is why he came to play. He wants to reduce the size of federal government, reduce the scope of federal government, reduce the cost of federal government, make it more efficient where it is. And he is the kind of guy who would love to get that assignment from Donald Trump.
Now, let me ask you this point. There's been a lot of comparisons between Trump and Goldwater. The debacle of 64, in which not only was Goldwater trounced, winning only six states, but down ballot all over the country, Republicans lost. Mm-hmm. And we'll have specifics on that. But that's the general perception when they talk about the Goldwater debacle.
Yeah.
It's legislators worrying about that they're going to lose their race because they don't want to be associated with a candidate that may be viewed as too extreme. Isn't the better comparison is not with Trump? The comparison is much stronger if Cruz is the comparison to Goldwater, because that's the comparison, isn't it? Not Trump.
Well,
Goldwater was not a populist.
I honestly think it is. Goldwater was not a populist, he was an ideologue who was also a member of the Washington establishment. Very good friends with Richard Nixon with Jack Kennedy.
Yeah, liked by everybody.
He was He was well regarded in the Senate Club, which is how the Senate operated up until a few years ago. Anyway. I think you're right. I think that Cruz would be a better example of that. I do want to say this. It is early relative to, I think, either brokered convention or Trump's lack of suitability with the general election electorate. I think that what's going on now, there's a lot of, feigned horror on the Democrat side about Trump did this today. Oh, my God. And nothing about Hillary, nothing about the fact she's under FBI. The more they put attention onto Trump, the less people are talking about Hillary and her foibles.
No, that's not it. I think people are, in fact, appalled by things Donald Trump says, being so viscerally anti-Muslim, now talking about Russia, viscerally racist about Mexicans. I think there is, in fact, a visceral reaction to that, that is sincere and not strategic. But to an earlier point,
but his polls are going up when he says these things.
Well, look, not among Democrats, right?
And there's going to be a lot of Democrats at the lower end, working class Democrats, Reagan Democrats, who are going to be attracted to him.
But the question as to whether we get a brokered convention is a question of how these delegates get elected, and it's whether these are by proportional representation by congressional district or if it's winner take all. And I think, we should wait until a couple weeks from now until we get a full explanation of it. But I don't think the structure of the Republican rules allow for somebody else like Cruz to just sort of sweep away the little guys if they remain somewhat competitive. You don't need to win a state to stay in the race.
Would – this is if you're an establishment Republican, you might as well get your go get your nitroglycerin pill with a question I'm about to ask. What about – a Trump-Cruz ticket?
I think a Trump-Cruz – I mean, look, I don't like what Trump has been saying. I want to be very clear about that. And I think, this ban on Muslims is awful, and I think that his comments – his lack of distinguishing himself from Joe Scarborough's line of questioning about killing journalists.
Right.
This is very distressing.
Right.
So I don't think that he's ready for prime time ultimately yet, okay? On the other hand, there's time between
the master of prime time. Go ahead.
My statement is I will point out one other thing about the brokered convention. I believe the fact that the Republicans do not have the White House slightly increases the chance of a brokered convention. And here is why. In Kansas City in 1976, we held the White House. It was occupied by Gerald Ford. And there was an insurgency from Ronald Reagan and the conservatives against the establishmentarians of that day.
Right.
Okay? But ultimately that was turned back because of the power of the White House, which came down hard on the Alabama delegation.
Yes.
And that was what actually tipped it back to President Ford. That morning, it was going to go to Reagan.
Wow.
Yep.
But that night on the floor of the convention, it went to Ford.
Wow.
We don't have the White House this year. The Democrats have the White House this
right.
year. That slightly increases the possibility of a brokered convention.
The 1976 Republican convention in Kansas City.
Oh, Kansas.
was the second most exciting convention I've ever been at in my life. The first was my first, 1964, at the Cow Palace in San Francisco that nominated Barry Goldwater. But I was in Kansas City at that convention in that hall, the Reagan-Ford battle, and there was nothing that's been as exciting as that other than what happened in the Cow Palace. Back shortly.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.
The beauty of Amling's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amling's now at 888-880-TREE. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thanks very much for joining us. 1-800-723-8029. Wherever you're listening from coast to coast, if you have a candidate for president and want to call in and chat about him, do give us a call. We've been talking about a brokered convention. We've been talking about who evolves in this winter. We a couple of segments ago, we basically said that Donald Trump probably might run into a little surprise in Iowa, because I think Iowa is an organizational state. And Iowa seems to be ripe for Ted Cruz because of his religious support there. Donald Trump, I'm a little bit surprised that Donald Trump hasn't found some way to sort of pull back a little bit and lower the expectations. Again, that's what a traditional politician would do, however, is get into a lower expectation game. But Donald Trump, not being a professional politician, maybe doesn't understand that yet, and he'll find some reason if he doesn't win Iowa. But I want to look at the Republican calendar that is coming up. This is just for the month of February. These are the first four primaries or caucuses that we're going to take a look at. On February 1st, there is the Iowa caucus. And there's 30 delegates at stake. This is for the Republicans. February 9th, a couple days later, a little over a week later, the New Hampshire primary. We're going to be talking about that in the next segment of the program. 23 delegates there. Then you move south to South Carolina, the primary there on the 20th. And they have 50 Republican delegates. And then you go to Nevada on the 23rd, and Nevada has a caucus. They have 30 Republican delegates there. So just we're going to keep this up for, again, those of you who are watching us on television. We're sharing this graphically. But as you look at this, Chris, I want to have everybody sort of look at the crystal ball here. As you look at that, if Ted Cruz wins Iowa, how do you take us through the rest of the month of February as you see it right now?
I think if Ted Cruz wins Iowa, then there is going. Then the next question is, who will drop out after Iowa?
Mm-hmm. And right? There will be a number of them.
And there will be several folks. The culling of the herd will take place. And, you know, so we'll see all of those, the kids at the junior table, they're all going to be gone.
Right.
But then you've got the question of Carly Fiorina, Jeb Bush. I mean, some of these folks, they will have reached the end of their
right.
viability. Okay. And then the dynamic, I think, really becomes one of the insurgents versus the establishment. And I think you're going to see Rubio and Kasich, and if Kasich makes it that far, they're going to be on the establishment side. I think Trump and Cruz will be fighting each other, although maybe not attacking each other personally, on the insurgent side.
So let me ask you this question. If you go to if you go to South Carolina, again, you're saying you're not picking a winner in New Hampshire yet.
I think Christie is right now. There is a good line on Christie in New Hampshire. He is really resonating as a Northeast Republican, and Northeastern Republicans are different from everybody else, and it's not just conservative liberal. There's a whole different thing going on there. So I think Christie has a real shot because of New Hampshire, okay?
Okay.
And then I think you get to South Carolina, which is a deeply, deeply conservative, and I would say much more ideological state relative to Republican primary voters.
So that could be Cruz
versus
Trump
Christie.
Again.
Yeah, and
but if Trump and Cruz are splitting that vote, doesn't that open the opportunity up for
Christie? I think the folks in South Carolina, Tim Scott the senator, Trey Gowdy the congressman, defeated a classic establishment, longtime serving, nicest guy in the world, establishment Republican. No ideas, no connection to the Tea Party. I think you're going to see a barn burner in South Carolina between the two wings of the party. And we may be down to four candidates at that point. We may have Rubio and Christie on one side.
Graham will be long gone.
Who?
Graham.
Lindsey Graham will be gone right now.
He's already gone.
He doesn't want to be embarrassed by Blue. And now let's happen. But again, just 3 days later, now you got what's going on in Nevada.
Yeah.
Now, where does Nevada, and by everybody can jump into this.
No, but it's important. Is the primary a winner-take-all primary in South Carolina?
No.
How does it work?
It's by congressional district.
And there's like seven or eight or something?
Six or seven, maybe?
Ish, right?
There's seven congressional districts.
All right, so it's conceivable. But New Hampshire is winner-take-all by congressional district as well. And there's two, I think?
Two congressional
districts. Right? Okay. So it's possible that it matters a lot more who wins New Hampshire than it matters who wins Iowa.
Yes.
Because Iowa is a proportional state because it's a caucus state.
Right. No. I think you've got to look at the momentum here.
All right,
I think you've got to look at the spin and the momentum. And look what happened to Santorum last time. Yeah. There was a debacle out there counting the votes on the night of the caucus. And Santorum was denied a victory, and it was given to Romney. And Romney rode that longboard on the wave all the way up to
The reason I raise it, and I get momentum, but if I am a second-tier Republican candidate like Kasich or Lindsey Graham, and I think, hey, I still got a shot, I could win a congressional district, and I suspect there might be a brokered convention, and I think Donald Trump is a monster who is ruining the brand of the Republican Party, which he kind of is, right? Why wouldn't I continue to compete and continue to earn some delegates in these caucus states so that if there is a brokered convention, I remain a player for the views of the party that I hold so firmly?
Money.
Well, but that's also a long-term strategy. If you look at the numbers, again, back in 2008 in Iowa, John McCain came in fourth, But the idea is that if they're at least showing, they have to show in one of these three states, and start to rise.
But
I'm not sure that's true anymore.
That's
what Trump's counting on.
Right.
All right. Correct me if I'm wrong. In the last three Republican cycles, South Carolina has been the pivotal state, more so than Iowa and more so than New Hampshire.
And by the way, correct? Northeasterners don't do too well down in South Carolina.
But if Trump and Cruz are splitting that vote, and Christie has emerged in New Hampshire, does he pick up?
There's no chance. There's no chance.
You don't think so?
No, that'd be a fluke.
I don't know where Rubio makes his mark.
I think Rubio is looking
in February.
Rubio is looking for a top three finish in New Hampshire and in South Carolina.
If Rubio can get in the top three in any of those, at least the first three, based on what I'm looking at prior data,
I want to throw a proposal out here. Okay, and I just said a few moments ago one of the most exciting conventions I ever went to was in Kansas City in 1976. Ronald Reagan almost wrested the nomination from the incumbent president of the United States. And he did something right before the convention. He announced his running mate as Senator Richard Schweiker, a moderate Republican from Pennsylvania. It dominated the news for about 3 or 4 days. It got Ronald Reagan real close. Didn't pull it off, but it dominated the news. Here's a suggestion that I would make to some of the candidates that are out there struggling at the moment. Make a deal. Get in a room. Decide who's going to be the number one, who's going to be the number two, and you announce as a team. So whether it is Rubio as president and Kasich as the running mate, or Kasich as president and Rubio as the running mate. You join their campaigns.
Sometimes it's not that easy to decide.
Oh, well, I understand that, but I'm talking about a concept to dominate
I can
the
tell
political
you,
to, news
well,
for
you,
a couple of weeks.
You have to change the game, I mean, right. to borrow the phrase. And if you want to change the game, I will tell you a ticket that a lot of Republicans have talked about. Because who is the most consistent conservative and the most effective spokesman out there against Hillary Clinton? If you just sit
down. Carly.
If you were a Martian and you got off your spaceship and you just watched it, it would be Carly Fiorina. And I'm telling you, Rubio, Carly Fiorina, a lot of people are talking about. You have a Hispanic. The whole.
It doesn't give you California. You cannot argue against the math of Ohio and Florida. So it seems to me that the one that would have to swallow hard for this is the one we talked about during the break. The one that would have to swallow hard on this is John Kasich. Does John Kasich have an ego that would allow him to be a running mate for Rubio?
Absolutely not.
Okay. And Rubio, and it isn't now. It isn't going to be the other way around because most people would argue because of age and everything else. Should it be Kasich and Rubio? Now, again, the establishment might like that ticket, but I don't think that.
I don't think that's sellable.
And don't forget the guy who wrote The Art of the Deal. He might make a counter deal with somebody
like Trump,
like Cruz. Yeah,
like Cruz. Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah. Oh, okay. Yeah.
But again, no one is going to. None of the top three or top two are going to make that deal.
If they're threatened in a way that they might lose, they certainly will.
And you know what?
Unless that would be something that they would do in response to this. I'm talking about a Hail Mary from someone who's down in the pack.
It's a good
idea. The other point is I would say, and I've said this on the program and I'll say it again, because you've heard me say there's only three people that I think can be elected, Hillary Clinton, Rubio, and Trump. Those are the only three people that, in my view, can be elected president of the United States. And I've said I do not believe that Chris Christie is electable president of the United States.
Bruce, you're not
but
feeling,
he might
Bruce,
be nominatable.
You're not feeling the burn? You're not feeling the burn?
Nobody thinks
Come on,
man.
Can
be elected all president.
Right. No, I don't. I think he can be nominated president, just like I think I think Cruz can be nominated. I still don't believe that Christie can do it, but I do believe in looking at the dynamics of it all, Christie may be playing the terrorism card better than anyone else post.
Well, let's give. I don't think Christie is just playing a terrorism card. Christie is a very accomplished guy, and Christie became U.S. attorney a week before 9/11, and he's been the governor of a major state.
I can say it. He's too fat. People are not going to elect someone that is that overweight. We got to pause. Back shortly.
This is Larry King at the Museum of Broadcast Communications in Chicago. Tonight we've got a special guest for you to meet. What do you like to do as a kid?
I like to play baseball. I like to watch television.
What was your favorite sports team?
Sports team growing up was the St. Louis Cardinals.
What was your favorite vacation?
I think the vacation we went to New York City to the World's Fair. See Yankee Stadium.
Who was your childhood hero?
Childhood hero, probably Hopalong Cassidy.
What was your biggest fear growing up?
The biggest fear probably was that I would irritate my father.
What's the silliest thing you've ever done?
Irritated my father.
Give the gift of Larry King. Order your gift certificate now at museum.tv. That's museum.tv. Bruce Dumont back in Chicago. Thank you very much for joining us. You know, last night the Democrats got together at St. Olsen College in New Hampshire.
Anselm. Author of the ontological reason.
Anyway, well, we're going to have Chris Galdieri joins us. Chris, nice to have you with us this evening.
Happy to be here.
You are an assistant professor at that college, and it's called?
St. Anselm College.
Okay, we'll try to get it right. we mentioned at the beginning of the program, there was a real Donnybrook last night. I thought it was a very entertaining Democratic debate. What was the immediate reaction sort of in the spin room and around the state after that debate last night?
A couple of things. I think the big takeaway first was that Clinton and Sanders seemed to put the voter file controversy to rest very early, very, if not amiably, at least, you know, civilly. A lot of folks, I think, were prepared for, you know, a real, as you said, Donnybrook to take place. And that did not happen. Instead, they dealt with that and then moved on and, you know, talked about the issues that came up in the questions.
Now, for the on the Democratic side, Bernie Sanders is leading in the state. What are the most recent poll numbers, and has there been much shift in that in the last couple of weeks?
It depends on which poll you look at. There are some that have Sanders up by as many as 10 points. There are some that have Clinton up by 2 or 3 points. I think there is a real possibility for this to go either way. But I think the question for Sanders at this point is, even if he does pull off a win here, what happens next?
Right. Does anybody around the table, let me just ask, because we've got people around the table, does anyone, and I'm going to ask our Bernie Sanders people because we have some supporters here, Dan Johnson, where does Bernie Sanders get momentum if indeed he wins? Let's say he does well in Iowa, or maybe wins Iowa. He goes to New Hampshire, he does well or wins New Hampshire. Where does he go next? It's South Carolina doesn't seem to be a ripe state for him.
Well, look, it's important to remember that Democrats use proportional representation. So if you're competitive, you're getting 35, 40, 45% in state A, and then you get 55, 60% in state B, that's a wash. And I think Bernie Sanders continues to grow his momentum. I think it's a different kind of campaign. As you mentioned earlier, it's the first time in the history of the Republic that 2.2 million individual donations to a campaign has funded this thing. So I think, you know, Bernie's campaign is built on bringing new people in, right? Mm-hmm. And most people that the Bernie campaign is trying to reach out to aren't paying attention to politics just yet. And so every week as we get closer to actual elections, more people start plugging in. And I think those are part of our natural constituents.
Chris, on the campus at the college, can you describe the momentum and the fervor for Hillary and O'Malley and Sanders?
Sure. I think each of them has their supporters, especially among the student body. You know, I've had a young woman who is president of the college chapter of Ready for. There are also a lot of students who have found Bernie Sanders very attractive, very intriguing. I think if you are a, you know, young Democrat, the idea of this outsider insurgent campaign is a lot more appealing than going with the, you know, the established favorite. Martin O'Malley on campus, I think he's in the same predicament he is in the race generally. You know, he's got a solid resume. He's got a lot of experience as a governor and as a mayor, but he just hasn't been able to find a way to, you know, break his way into the conversation.
Tell us, if you will, I know that there may not be a lot of Republican talk on the college campus, but again, tell us, go beyond the politics of the college and tell us a little bit about what's happening on the Republican side. How strong is Trump there? And again, what we've been reading for the last couple of weeks is the guy who seems to be on the move there is Chris Christie.
Yeah, that's right. Trump is leading in most polls of the state, and that's pretty consistent with what we're seeing nationally and in a lot of polls in Iowa, although Cruz is pulling ahead there. But the Christie phenomenon is really interesting. Christie is someone who a lot of people had written off as early as the Bridgegate press conference.
Right.
Beginning of 2014, but he has really gone all in New Hampshire, and that seems to be paying off for him. He's been doing a lot of retail politics, which matters a lot here. He won the union leader endorsement, which is usually good for at least a few points on election day. The question, again, for Christie, I think, isn't that different from the one for Sanders, which is, where does he go from here? You know, candidates like him who go all in New Hampshire generally do that because they don't have a better option to them. Available to them. And so even if he did pull off a strong second, you know, then what happens in South Carolina, then what happens in Nevada? And I think it's you know, yeah. to be able to put together an organization and raise money quickly.
Chris Roebling, our Republican, has a question for you, Chris.
Professor, privileged to chat with you. Thank you. I want to ask you if you think that you're seeing any real organizing down at the voting district level, either by Trump or by Christie. I know what you're saying about where do they go from here, but I want to get a little bit more into their ability to identify and turn out their supporters, you know, on the 9th of February, just a week after the Iowa caucuses.
Yeah, that's a great question because, in fact, the Democrats have been sort of tweaking the Republicans about that. Ray Buckley, the chair of the New Hampshire Democratic Party, tweeted yesterday that Martin O'Malley has more paid staffers in New Hampshire than all of the Republican candidates combined.
Wow.
So, again, Trump is running a really unusual campaign. He's just, you know, sort of flying in, doing events, flying out. Has some paid staff, but not on the level that you're talking about, and neither does anybody else. And I think that that's really surprising. If you know this state, if you know the way the primaries tend to work, you know, that organizing, that face-to-face contact really does matter. And in a race like this where you've got, you know, four or five candidates all trying to be the mainstream Republican candidate, I think they are leaving votes the table for not organizing better here.
Traditionally, don't the voters in New Hampshire like to throw a monkey wrench and not ratify what the voters in Iowa have done the week before?
They do have a tendency to do that. I like to say that New Hampshire voters have a contrarian streak. I think they're very possessive of their first in the nation primary status, and so what happens in Iowa often doesn't carry a lot of weight here. And I also think there's a certain element of candidate self-selection. You know, you're seeing Ted Cruz going very heavily into Iowa, in part because Iowa is much friendlier territory for him than New Hampshire.
And it's not a big evangelical vote in New Hampshire.
No, not at all. New Hampshire is one of the least religiously observant states in the country, and that applies to Democrats and Republicans alike.
Let's talk about Jeb Bush. Is there a sign of life in that state for Jeb Bush?
There are some small signs. He does seem to be getting bigger crowds than he had been in the past, but I don't know that that's new people so much as it is simply better event organizing.
Dan Johnson has a question for you.
Hey, Professor. So in New Hampshire, anybody can walk into either party primary on election day and pick which one they do. And the fierce independents often can tip the balance depending on which party they're attracted to. I know the Bernie campaign is counting on drawing independents into the Democratic Party like Barack did in 2008. Who do you see on the Republican side that's trying to bring in those independents to the Republican primary and cast a ballot for them?
John Kasich in particular is really trying to do that. He has attracted a lot of support in terms of people working on his campaign and advising him his campaign from really sort of old guard Yankee Republicans in the state. And they really think that he has a shot of drawing some of those people into the Republican Party.
If we were to be watching New Hampshire television, much of it is bought out of the Boston market. Who would be saturating the airwaves of New Hampshire television at the moment?
We're not quite there yet in terms of saturation. But during the debate last night, there were there was a Ted Cruz ad. Right to Rise, the super PAC that is supporting Jeb Bush but is not coordinating with Jeb Bush, has started running a none of the above except for Jeb ad that attacks Rubio and Cruz and Trump all in the space of one ad. So I think between now and Election Day, it's just going to get worse.
Is there any surprise that you sense that's brewing out there right now? I think because there's been so much said about Chris Christie, and he does have the endorsement of the most powerful newspaper in the state. I don't think if Chris Christie snuck through and did well there, that would be a surprise. Is there another potential surprise on the Republican side that we should be aware of?
I think we need to watch Ted Cruz. He's not a great New Hampshire candidate, but there are polls that show him leading Trump in Iowa. And even though he is not personally popular with a lot of Republicans, I think if he were to actually beat Trump in Iowa, and if this doesn't turn out to be a flash in the pan like, you know, Newt Gingrich and Michelle Bachmann and Herman Cain, 4 years ago, it's possible that a lot of Republicans who think Trump would be the worst possible option for their party might hold their noses and vote for Cruz, even though on the face of it, he would not be anybody's first choice.
Chris Roebling.
I want to go back, Professor, for a quick second to this question that Bruce posed about Bush, because John Sununu was the chief of staff to Bush's father, and he was a governor up there in New Hampshire, knows everybody. And Bush's organization, the Bush family organization for both the father and the brother, were very strong. So you're saying that really Jeb is only partially benefiting from those prior relationships?
10 seconds, Professor.
Yes, he's only benefiting. In fact, John Sununu, the son, the former senator, is actually on board with the Kasich campaign. So the Sununus are a house divided.
Very good. Chris Galderi, thank you very much. A professor at St. Anselm College in New Hampshire, we thank you very much for joining us. And we thank all of our guests for being with us as well. I'm Bruce Dumont. Thanks for being with us tonight. Don't go away.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlings now at 888-880-TREE.
Excuse me, Chad. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com. Bruce Dumont back. Thanks very much for joining us. Let's go to calls. Let's go to John in Springfield, Illinois, listening to us on WMAY. Go ahead, John.
Hi, guys. I'm really enjoying this discussion with your panel. It's really unbiased. You know about the presidential candidates.
Thanks.
And I've got a situation that started back in 2008 when the economy crashed. I'd like to get your guys' opinion on who I should vote for. Okay, and when the economy crashed, I had a small business, and I was bringing home about $200,000 a year take home. Well, the economy crashed, and I had to lay three guys off, bring my business home. And now I'm kind of almost at poverty level because I've got two daughters that have very bad medical problems. And so if I don't take the free insurance through Obamacare and my income goes up, I immediately have to pay the next $15,000 of revenue increase in health insurance premiums, not to mention the extra taxes I would have to pay. And so it's become an uphill battle for guys like me to recover because we didn't get the $1 trillion bailout. The top 1% did. And us small business guys who employ more than half the people in the United States, we got screwed. We didn't get a bailout. We're still waiting for one. In fact, I lost a lot of assets. The entire middle class lost two-thirds of their assets after the 2008 crash. I don't know how much of that's been recovered, but I haven't recovered much at all. So who should I vote for?
Well, you said
I think to let you guys discuss it. Okay?
John, you can stay on the line because I think our Bernie Sanders person is ready to jump in the bid here.
You sound like a natural. I mean, first, thank God that we've got a Medicaid expansion because the Democrats in Congress allowed your family to stay afloat because we're covering your family's health needs,
exactly,
as we should. And thank goodness the Democrats were able to implement that for you. If only Bernie's plan was implemented, we could have a Medicare for everybody like senior citizens have, and then you wouldn't have to worry about your medical bills as you made more money, which is something that Bernie Sanders has been advocating. And I think if anybody, and I think there's probably consensus around the table on this one, if anyone has articulated the need to make sure that the 1% pay their fair share so that the middle class can have
what is
better
their fair
shot.
Share? Okay, so Dan, what is their fair share? Give us a number beyond which
let me see what
Bernie
John,
Sanders.
Let me see if John agrees that sounds like this sounds like Bernie Sanders is your type of guy to vote for. John, what do you think?
I've been looking real strong at him. But you know, one of the problems that we're running into with the health care, and I had my mom die 2 years ago. She got 3 unneeded surgeries. Yeah. Okay, on an inoperable cancer, put a bill up to the taxpayers about $400,000. Okay, and myself, like I said, I'm sitting here trying to get by, but I'm not paying much for health care because my income's real low.
Right.
But what I'm seeing in the United States is this problem with greed with the pharmaceutical industry and the healthcare industry is they have no incentive to make
it
better.
Yeah. John, listen, we're going to move on. Listen, thank you very much for your call. We do appreciate it. I think you made your point. You got your advice. I want to go to one little quick discussion before we go off the air. We got about 5 minutes left. I want to look at some of these swing states where the general election is going to be won. Obviously, we've been talking about the primary, but in 2008 and in 2012, the following states were won by Barack Obama: Iowa, Nevada, Florida, Wisconsin, New Hampshire, Pennsylvania, Colorado, Virginia, and Ohio. Nick Katsaroubas, as you look at those states, is there any candidate on the Republican side or Democratic side that you think runs a sweep like Barack Obama?
I don't think a sweep, but I think there is opportunity within those states to see some of those states go for Republican, and at least to split them. I don't see it being a full sweep at this point in time.
Dan Johnson,
is there
a sweep on those states?
I'm passing.
Well, you got. I would say you've got Republican momentum in almost all of these states. Pennsylvania, Virginia, Ohio. Well, Virginia, I think we lost. But Pennsylvania, Ohio, Colorado, New Hampshire, Wisconsin, Florida, Nevada, Iowa. And in all of those states except Virginia, you've got identifiable off-year Republican momentum either at the state constitutional officer level or at the state legislative level. So I think
we know the off years don't really.
Who would trade places? You'd
rather have
a recent win statewide or taking a state house. We now have 35 Republican governors. We've got of the 98 or 99 state houses, something like 66 are Republican. So there's a lot more resonance for the Republican message. Now, how that relates to Trump, if he ends up on top, I don't know. But I think anybody of the rest of that group.
Well, Kasich warned about Ohio. If Trump wins, he's going to tank on the party there.
He's an interested party when he says that.
Yeah,
but you know what? No one has been
more. You also
more,
have to have the operation of the state to win it.
And no one has been more vociferous against Trump than what I've seen, sort of mid-level and lower-level Republican elected officials who have called this a clown show, atrocious, he doesn't speak for me. Republican electeds, and I don't know any Republican electeds that have lined up for Trump, they're the ones that have been sort of the most firm at absolutely shutting down
Donald
Trump.
Well, this is a candidate for president that a lot of people, when he goes to a state, they're not going to want to appear with him.
Right.
Well, and, going back to the primary a little bit is, unlike the Democratic Party where you have the PLEAO delegates, the superdelegates who kind of are check and balance, the Republicans don't have that. So, Trump, just because the state legislative candidates might be Republicans, those aren't the people that are going to make the delegate decisions here.
The Republicans don't have a 30% superdelegate base?
Do not.
Well, we believe in representation.
It is going to be, fasten your seatbelt, it's going to be a fun 323 days to go before Election Day. By the way, I just want to thank you all for being here every single Sunday night this year. I'm not going to be here next week. I'm taking the week off. But my good friend Chris Roebling over here, who's done such a terrific job as guest, he's going to be sitting in this seat, and then we're going to be back in a couple of weeks, and our good friend Nick Katsaroubas is going to be back. And we are going to mention to you on that show, we're going to mention a very special, you can go to the Beyond the Beltway website now, the Beyond the Beltway website, beyondthebeltway.com, and there is a resource book that was produced by Nick Katsaroubas of DePaul University. You can download it, and then every Sunday night you can follow along. We're going to take you inside how this campaign is unfolding, a lot of specific details. Nick's done a terrific job. He's sharing it with you on beyondthebeltway.com. I'm Bruce Dumont, so long from Chicago.
Are you headed to Los Angeles? Looking for the ideal place for you and your family to relax and enjoy yourselves? A place that combines a Four Diamond Hotel experience with a convenient location? It's the Hilton Los Angeles Universal City, just steps away from Universal Studios Hollywood, CityWalk, and NBC Studios. Just a short ride to the Hollywood Walk of Fame, TCL Chinese Theater, Warner Brothers, and other popular attractions. Enjoy spacious rooms offering breathtaking views and a world-class Las Vegas-style seafood and prime rib buffet every weekend and holidays. Share family fun and enjoy the oasis of the palm tree-lined pool and whirlpool. Relax in your own private poolside cabana with a cocktail or snack at your fingertips. Book your reservation today at HiltonUniversal.com or call 1-800-774-1500. The Hilton Los Angeles Universal City at HiltonUniversal.com. They let you be the star in Hollywood.
The beauty of Amlink's interior landscape is that we can come in, work with your budget, and create a fit that makes sense for your facility at that time. Our goal is to create foliage designs that not only look incredible the day we put them in, but you can go back 2 years later and it is still maintained and has grown as a perfect fit for that customer's environment.
Call Amlinks now at 888-880-TREE.
Everyone loves vacationing in Florida. So why not experience it as it was meant to be, where turquoise Gulf waters meet tranquil island beaches. Feel the powder-soft sand between your toes. Revel in a glorious island sunset. Shop the boutiques of a seaside village. Ride horseback along tranquil waters. This is Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Real, authentic Florida, where you can discover an intimate downtown and sip cappuccino at a sidewalk cafe. Catch fresh fish for dinner. Even tour a working winery. Just minutes from all the rest Florida has to offer. Bradenton, Anna Maria Island, Longboat Key. Plan your visit online at BradentonGulfIslands.com. That's BradentonGulfIslands.com.
Excuse me, Chet. Here is a flash from the Associated Press, Dateline Dallas. Two priests who were with President Kennedy say he is dead of bullet wounds.
It was a moment that defined American history. But what really happened in Dallas that day? And does that tragedy lead back to Chicago? A new play, Assassination Theater, answers that question. Now at the Museum of Broadcast Communications. For tickets, go to assassinationtheater.com.